Welcome to the 2026 Trend Talk Podcast, a multi-part mini-series from the American Planning Association in partnership with the Lincoln Institute of Land Policy. This series focuses on new and emerging trends and their potential impacts on our communities and the practice of planning. My name is Joe DeAngelis, Research Manager at the American Planning Association and your host. Today, I'm joined by Tom Sanchez, who is a professor in the Department of Landscape Architecture and Urban Planning at Texas A&M University. Tom earned his PhD in city planning from Georgia Tech. His research and teaching focuses on planning methods, technology, and transportation. His most recent book was AI for Urban Planning, which was published by Routledge in September 2025. Tom serves as the American Planning Association Education Committee Chair and as a member of APA's Artificial Intelligence Foresight Community, and is also an APA Trend Scout. Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Joe. Good to be here.
All right. We're super happy to have you. Here at APA, we've been publishing trend reports, as you know, every year since 2022. That was our first report. And even then, we had a lot to say about AI. We've covered this topic and the trends related to it every year since then. But we've never really looked in depth at the role of artificial intelligence in planning education. We think that this is likely to be a huge story in the development of the next generation of planners. And so we're here to talk about that a bit today. But to do that, we probably need to set a little bit of a baseline for people to talk a little about the role of AI tools, especially generative AI, I would say, in planning education now. There's a picture from our perspective as we work on this, as we've released this trend report and as we've written about it and researched it, that's a little bit like the Wild West out there, where universities and administrators, faculty and students, they're all trying to figure out the proper role for these kinds of tools. Can you give me your sense as a planning educator of the ways in which AI is being used by educators and students today?
Yeah, this is brand new to most of us. And so, and especially when we're thinking about how to incorporate it in the classroom, how to use it within our research, how to combine those, is it's a bit of a challenge right now, and especially with it rapidly evolving. And so trying to, as planners, always trying to anticipate what's going to happen next, it's a challenge for us. And I'll mention just real briefly in the PAS report that I did for APA on artificial intelligence for planners was in 2022, and the report was due in by the end of 2022, and then OpenAI released ChatGPT in November of 2022, and here I was 98% done with the report. And so so I had to look at what ChatGPT was quickly and then realized, you know, almost immediately, you know, what a huge impact it was and what a huge difference it was in terms of AI methods and tools. So I guess part of that, too, is in the back of our minds and thinking about this for education, are we going to see another, you know, something, you know, like this, kind of a revolutionary change that we need to try to anticipate along the way to teach? And so I think at this point, our focus is really on, you know, what are the fundamental aspects of AI? So things like natural language processing, machine learning, even computer vision and things like that, and really trying to emphasize the terminology and examples and, you know, kind of the basics to students now, so that any new methods that come along or any changes, they've got a sense for what that, you know, what that means, how that can be used. They're fluent or they're literate in what AI technologies are. But I will say, kind of it within some of our programs, our degree programs, we're wondering about, okay, should this be used in the classroom or not? Are we having students rely on, you know, kind of traditional methods of reading and trying to memorize and retain knowledge that way? Or are we going to allow some of these tools that are kind of a different kind of recall associated with that? And same with the writing, which is such an important part of what we teach in planning as far as communications. how much, you know, how much of these tools, especially the generative AI, are we going to allow or teach, you know, related to planning tasks. So it's evolving. It's, you know, as you know.
For sure. And it, I'm glad you mentioned too about having to go back and rapidly revise stuff because of ChatGPT's release back in November of 22, I think you said. In our 2022 trend report that I mentioned earlier, we talk about artificial intelligence. I did a search through. We never mention ChatGPT or the words generative AI or anything like that in there. And the next year we did, right? Because it came out in 2020, in November of that year, we were in production, right? So we had to make sure that we got some of the stuff into the 2023 report as we were coming out with it. But it was definitely a learning experience, and it definitely highlights some of that, like these rapid changes in technology, even as we were studying it at the time, was super interesting. Let's maybe use that as some fodder for our turn toward the future with this. There are some maybe growing concerns about an AI bubble, right? There are a few, though, even with this bubble in mind, potentially, who really are expecting the broader scale disruptions of AI to suddenly end and to stop. Even if there's some potential industry or contraction happening, there's still an expectation that these tools will grow in sophistication or ubiquity or spread or whatever it is. Now that we have the present set, looking ahead, how do you maybe anticipate or see the increasing use of AI tools being used in a planning context and a planning education type context in the future for both educators, right, on your end and for students?
So I think that's an interesting, I've heard lots of mentioned about this this AI bubble concept. And I think that's, from my understanding of it, mainly from kind of an investment perspective, and how much, you know, how many billions are going into building up the capacity for AI, and will we reach a certain threshold where, you know, there's a question about what the return is going to be. Now, the expectation is high, it's new, there's a lot of anticipation, there's a lot of speculation about what's happening. And so it's hard, you know, it's hard for me to imagine that we are going to reach a certain level of, you know, what it's capable of doing, and, you know, and then flatten out somehow. Certainly that's possible. And the computer scientists and the technologists know a lot more about this than I do. But this type of technology, it seems like, you know, it's gonna keep building on itself, and you know, increasing in terms of just its overall capabilities. Before, a lot of the tools that we were using were for like quantitative analysis, prediction, estimation, pattern detection, and things like that, where we didn't have this mode of use that was, you know, like a conversational interface with it, being able to talk with it. Before, you had to program, you had to know what the statistical tools were and how to use those. Now anybody can use these and do very sophisticated things. And so I think about, you know, my abilities in coding over the years. And I've even, you know, over the last couple of years, I've seen ChatGPT write me code that is very sophisticated with, you know, just, you know, a handful of prompts, maybe some corrections involved, you know, for sure. But, you know, going from something that was, you know, very technical, very sophisticated, taking a lot of training and a lot of time to be able to do, you know, actually within minutes now. And so, it's hard for me to imagine, and maybe that's just because of the pace of things right now, that we're going to be in this bubble sort of situation. Things are going to flatten out and we're going to say, okay, well, we're there, you know, what now? It just seems like there's going to be more and more possible in terms of really what we're trying to accomplish. And I think that that's getting to, you know, this artificial kind of general intelligence or super intelligence or whatever, you know, whatever level you want to talk about. And so it may be, you know, for right now, a situation where it's like a day at a time. You know, we're going to work with what we have right now. And then, you know, for us as planners and, you know, for our practicing planners and the academics as well, is just trying to keep up with what we have and trying to recognize which of these tools are actually going to benefit us in doing planning and having positive impacts on the communities that we're planning for. And I think that's probably going to be a big challenge of it. How much of this is going to be time spent like, gee, this is a lot of fun, you know, playing with some of these tools versus really kind of tackling the tasks that we need to you know, be working on in planning.
I think that's a really important point. In some of the research that we've done on this as part of our trend report development and such over the years, there's these tools are interesting at first because they're unique and they're kind of fun to use and they're new. But as we look into the future on this, there is going to be this very rough period, I would imagine, of actually testing these things out and trying and failing and seeing what use cases they actually do have in an educational setting, what use cases they actually do have in a practice setting. And that's not really going to settle itself out early on in this discussion. You kind of, if this is going to be a consumer level technology that's going to be with us for a really long time, I do imagine this sort of gaming out and playing out over that long period of time in which some of these use cases are going to have to develop organically on their own. So it's a really interesting point that that you make there for sure.
And it makes me think about too, is I was, you know, I experienced when microcomputers got rolled out and started, you know, being on planners' desks and you know, at the very beginning stages of that. And, you know, and there was a lot of, you know, there's a lot of concern about, oh, these computers, what are they going to do? They're going to take people's jobs. And we, you know, a lot of the things that we're hearing about today, but, you know, somebody needed to turn on those computers. Somebody actually needed to use those computers and, you know, and, figure out what applications were appropriate for them. And so, and then GIS came along and it was like, okay, well, you know, let's map everything and, you know, and look at what we can do with this that we couldn't before, you know, looking at the spatial analysis and visualization and even simulation. Mm-hmm. But my question is, in looking back is what really, and there's no way of knowing this, I don't think, what really has been the net benefit of computerization, you know, on planning? Mm-hmm. What has the net benefit of GIS and that understanding kind of the data and places? How has that benefited planning? You know, is there any tangible kind of way that we can say that, hey, we're doing a better job today than we were before? I'm not sure we really know. And, But I'm thinking that this might be a little bit different, but I don't know. That was said back then too. So
for sure, turning back towards the academia type focus here, there's been a lot written about some emerging concerns. In our trend report, we touch on some of the misinformation and disinformation challenges of artificial intelligence. For example, some of these tools, they'll create very convincing sounding answers that aren't necessarily false as so much as they're hallucinations, right? As they're increasingly called in the media, I've seen them discussed in that regard. Papers maybe that have made up titles and made up authors that might sound real, but don't actually exist in the real world. Within an academic setting, you know, where you have a lot of experience, and given the ways that these models kind of collect and process and maybe reinforce bad or wrong information, can you talk a little bit about this from your own perspective? And do you see it as a growing concern within planning, academia, and education?
And that's an interesting question, because so much of our communications is done, you know, written or spoken, you know, language. And those sorts, and like you're saying, really getting some convincing, you know, output from these models, you know, that we might be tempted to trust them, and then come to find out, you know, there have been these kind of made up outputs, the misinformation, the disinformation, whatever form that it takes. But, you know, I don't think this is really any different than how we should be handling, you know, information, you know, generation for the purposes of planning, where we're always reviewing and verifying and, you know, confirming, you know, what we're putting into our reports or our plans. And we want to maintain that rigor. And so now it's kind of taking it to another level where before, if maybe there was something that was incorrect within a report or something that was misstated, it might have been fairly easy to spot. And now it might be a little more challenging because it's been stated with what looks to be a reference or some kind of background source. But then, like you said, come to find out that's not even real. So it takes a different level of kind of drilling down into it to confirm it. So I think that maybe that better uses our skills or our intelligence in being able to confirm, you know, what we're writing, or maybe this is good for us that now we're going to pay closer attention, you know, to the facts that, or information, I should say, that are included, as well as any sources or references or, any of the other information that's being used, just, you know, being able to confirm that. And I think a big element of that too is the openness and the transparency. Where did this come from? Whose idea was this? How was it generated? Which before we never really questioned. You know, we put a report together and we just assumed, oh, well, you know, the planner in our department wrote that. And so they drew upon whatever sources were available, you know, a colleague or a peer at another, you know, organization, or maybe something that was in, documented in another report or online somewhere. Now it might take a little more work to do that, but maybe that's good for us.
Sure. One of the primary functions, as we understand planning education now, is essentially to prepare students for the actual world of professional practice, to get out there and to be planners, right? You go to planning school and then you want to become a planner after that. You've written a book on this, right? In that the world of professional practice might be undergoing quite a bit of change these days. Local governments and planning departments are increasingly developing policies related to the use of artificial intelligence for things like data collection and interpretation. Generative AI tools are being used for reports and plans themselves, things that you just mentioned before. Looking ahead a little bit, how do you see planning schools, planning educators, trying to adapt to a field of practice that is a lot more willing to use these tools? You know, how might the experience, the topics, the content, or even the format of education change to actually adapt to this world in which actual planning departments are actively using artificial intelligence tools?
Right. Now, I think in terms of education, or planning education, I'm mostly seeing kind of these AI tools and methods being discussed in methods classes. And so at this point, really, it's kind of laying them out there, kind of showing what's on the menu, talking about the different sorts of tools, capabilities, limitations, and where they can be applied. And then just providing kind of that literacy that I talked about before on, you know, what can these tools do? What can't they? What kind of data is needed? What are the different kinds of challenges that we face using some of these? So if it's things around data bias or methods that we're using that may not be entirely clear to us, things like, you know, neural networks are mentioned a lot. What is that? What's doing? What's the input? What's the, you know, the output for those? So I think it's really trying to teach about or exposing the students to, you know, what these, you know, what the different elements of the technology are, and then hopefully for those that kind of have, you know, potentially some kind of positive impact or are appropriate in being applied, those will be the ones that they will take to their new job, take to their new career, and start to use those. And I think back to, you know, something like GIS when we were teaching GIS, and, you know, there may have been a lot of planning organizations that weren't using GIS. And so our, you know, our students were bringing some of these new methods with them, you know, in creating some of that change. There were some planning organizations that were very forward looking and, you know, were out front of kind of planning education at the same time too. So I think it's kind of syncing up where the planning education is at related to these methods and what we need in practice. But that in itself brings up an interesting question: is should we be teaching our students about tools that are available today and processes that we're using today, or should we be teaching them about kind of the newer, maybe more innovative methods for doing some of these things? So kind of bringing that, you know, bringing that with them. And I've seen that a bit in conversations between practicing planners and academics. It's like, oh, you know, some of these students are coming out and they don't know what, you know, today's methods or tools or processes are because you've been teaching them about, you know, something new or different. And I think we'll probably always be in that, you know, that, what would you call that? Kind of that, it's not tension, right. You know, where we're trying to be forward looking in terms of, you know, the educational part of it, but also being recognizing that they're, you know, we want students to be able to step in and be able to, you know, get right to work, you know, today. And so, it's a bit of a challenge. But I think the important thing there is the conversation between the academics and the practitioners. Things like, you know, the relationship between ACSP and APA, and we've got a ACSP task force now that's on artificial intelligence and planning, and that's one of the things that we're looking at, is making sure that we're thinking about practice all along the way and making sure that we're strengthening that connection, as well as making sure that we're focusing on research that's going to make its way, hopefully, into better practice and into better plan making. That task force too, and this has educational side of it as well, as we're collaborating with ASOP, the Association of European Schools of Planning as well. And we're doing some peer exchange with them as well. And we'll be having a conference next summer, the World Planning Congress. But anyhow, we're collaborating and bringing together these planning academics and practitioners from different countries to have this conversation about where's this AI thing going. And I think that that'll be a great opportunity for, you know, to learn from each other and hopefully map out the directions that we'll be taking and, you know, how this can ultimately impact practice.
I think that's a good segue for what I think is maybe a growing concern as well at the entry level place of planning, right? So increasingly there are some concerns that artificial intelligence is maybe seen as a potential replacement for early career professionals in entry-level positions, regardless of what that field is. Of course, this has the potential to actually cut off or cut back on a pipeline of those new planning professionals who maybe go on to become mid-career planners and then planning directors later on in life. Do you see this as a potential future challenge for planning educators and universities to start to confront or to try to deal with at this time now?
Yeah, and I think this will involve a rethinking of our processes. You know, when we back in the completely analog days, you know, we had interns or new planners that were, you know, redrawing maps or, you know, rewriting reports or typing them in or whatever it might have been. And then computers came along or kind of, you know, we digitized these things. And then wasn't the same kind of work or labor involved. So we shifted those around. We didn't have, you know, interns typing or coloring maps or whatever it might have been. And so those tasks changed. And so I think we'll see a kind of a resorting of the tasks and what we need to accomplish and kind of what is that. You know, what is that kind of lower level, what would we call that? Kind of that background.
That early level experiential type planning where you're learning right. A lot of intricate things on the job. Some of that I could easily see as being, you know, standardized in some ways or changed right. In some ways.
But examples of that, when we've got the intern coming in, kind of right. What is that? They're doing a lot of learning in that process, but they're also doing a lot of, you know, just kind of that lower level work that needs to be done, that's being fed into, you know, or that's fed up into, you know, into these planning processes. So I guess, you know, so that is going to be, you know, we're going to see some resorting of that. And what does that look like when some of these tasks now can be combined or automated or even kind of change their whole form in terms of how we do these things. And so we'll need to adapt. And again, I think this is important for this conversation and communication between, Planning Academy and, you know, and planning practice, making sure that we know what's happening in the field, what's happening in practice, and making sure that, you know, we're providing or teaching about the right tools and talking about, you know, what is that reshuffling of these processes and tasks look like. And so, you know, it's going to be an evolution of how we do it. And so we've been through this a few times with the technology. I'm only imagining that it will continue. And so again, making sure that we're collaborating and we're working together between kind of planning educators and planning practitioners.
Let's close maybe with your hopes for the future in this area. You're somebody who has your foot in kind of both camps here, right? You've got the AI world and you've got the planning education world. What do you see as some really interesting potential advancements in artificial intelligence that you're looking forward to and that you think could have some major future impacts on the planning education world within academia and also that might benefit the world of practice and communities themselves?
One of the things that I've been thinking about a lot is, you know, what we're seeing with AI as a knowledge management tool. And now when we're thinking about things like large language models, a lot of that text base, even though we have generative models that are, you know, imagery or video or sound or, you know, these different formats. But now we really have the capability to capture knowledge over time. So it's kind of that history and the development of places. We can also be capturing kind of community sentiment. And so we have community involvement, community input. Now that can be part of that model, the planning intelligence, where, you know, it used to be, you know, you had a planner and a planning organization and they retired and they took their experience and their knowledge with them. Yeah, they probably left some things behind in terms of, you know, reports they worked on or projects they were involved with that got documented. But, you know, whatever wisdom or knowledge that they had walked out the door. And maybe we've got an opportunity now to capture as much of that as we can to use that in the planning process. And not only just at the local scale or for a particular organization, but we can draw across organizations across, you know, and expertise across the country, you know, and kind of, you know, a broad range of planning perspectives in building that knowledge. Yeah, you know, there are things that are, you know, truly local and unique to the places that we're planning. But I think that, you know, this knowledge management or being able to capture as much of this intelligence as possible can help us answer, you know, our local kind of specific unique questions with this accumulation and good management of that information. And whether that's planning expertise, public input, research that's happening, you know, and even, you know, even what we're hearing on the governance or the political side on making these decisions. So that's what I find really kind of fascinating, is kind of on a, like a planning brain, planning intelligence. How can we, because, you know, this is also encyclopedic knowledge that we're able to build with some of these models now, which I think, hopefully will, you know, will benefit us if we, you know, we're capturing the right information, along the way, and then we're able to access it efficiently.
I think it's always good for us to close on that kind of hopeful, forward-looking note, especially on a topic like this, where there's just so much up in the air, right? Looking into the future, like, you know, somebody a couple of years ago wouldn't really have been able to truly predict where we'd be at today. And we probably can't do the same, but we can look at some of these general trends. We can learn from the past, right? On what is going to be interesting about how this technology might develop in the future, and hopefully try to draw some inferences in that area as well, for sure.
And I want to add, it's like my main thought about this is, yes, we need to be careful. We're planners. We're always careful, but let's not be afraid, right? You know? And so I think kind of ignoring, you know, these changes and the new things that we're seeing and kind of the uncertainties. Well, if we are truly building some intelligence, let's use that intelligence to inform how we confront or how we adapt or how we, you know, how we innovate and, you know, and keep an open mind and work together.
With that, I think that we can wrap it up for today. Thank you, Tom, for joining us for this fantastic conversation on what feels like every year. This is just a topic that's constantly growing in importance. We really appreciate your time today.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe. And so what are we going to be talking about next year?
We'll see where we're at next year on this with an update. For more on this topic, a summary of this discussion, and many other collected trends and signals, please check out APA's 2026 Trend Report, which is available at planning.org/foresight.